welcome to the International Writers Network. And as usual, I have a wonderful writer who's our guest speaker today. And her name is Anne Morgan. And she is a member of the Ink Splinters. And she's also a wonderful academic woman with lots of experience. But I'm not going to say so much because she's going to tell you a lot herself. First of all, she was born in London, but she actually grew up in Dublin. So we're going to find a bit about her history. Hi, Anne, and welcome to this International Writers Network.
Hi, Mary, and thanks very much for having me.
It's great to have you on this platform. Now, Anne, you went to Maynooth University. You studied history, English, and sociology. You were a special guest at the Out of Lunch series, which I'm going to ask you for a bit later. But first of all, with the academic qualification, how did that help your writing? Were you always a writer, and is that why you studied English?
Well, I loved writing from a very early age, and I actually remember my earliest encounter with writing. I was actually 5 years old, and it was Christmas time. And I remember I got dolls and presents, but I got this little yellow notebook and I was transfixed with it. And I took up a pen and I started writing in it, and I'm writing ever since. I loved English at school, and I wasn't that familiar with different poets, only the ones that were on the syllabus, you know. But I had a very clear picture of what I wanted to do. I thought maybe journalism, lecturing, or psychology. So my first choice on the CAO list was Trinity, then the second was UCD, and the third was Maynooth, actually. And I actually got UCD, but because of the random selection, there was an awful lot of applicants that year. I actually missed it, so I got Maynooth. But it was a lovely experience, you know. I made lifelong friends there, including Elise and Jenny, and it was a lovely campus, you know, not unlike Trinity or that, you know. And I actually didn't finish out the degree. I did 2 years. I got through 2 years, and then I took a bit of time off, and I did a course with my mum, actually. It was called the Literature of the Liberation. And we did, that's when kind of writing unofficially opened up for me as well. You know, we did Yvonne Boland and the Heart of Darkness and all that sort of stuff. And it was lovely, and gave me a chance to get to know my mum as a person, not just a mother, you know. And we'd walk over together to Dundrum. It took us about 50 minutes through the fields. I have great memories. And we'd do the first hour would be Alice, our tutor, would give a lecture. And then we'd have a break for tea and coffee. The second hour, then we'd have a discussion. And then a lot of times we used to head over to the pub and have apple pie and cream, just gorgeous whipped cream. So lovely.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, so, so then I kind of changed direction. I wanted to get some office skills, you know, to help me. So I did a lovely, in Dundrum, actually, travel and tourism course for a year, and I got a computer experience in that. And then a fourth course came up that looked very good, so I said, I'll try that. And then it just kind of was the boom, I think, at that time. So there's loads of jobs going, and particularly it was the right place to be in the fourth course, because lots of people would ring in and say, we have jobs going, you know, is anyone interested? So the VEC rang up, said, well, we've a slot here to cover maternity leave, would you be interested? And they thought of me, so I did the interview and I got the place, and I absolutely loved it. For my first job, you know, I mean, I came in the first day and I was kind of nervous, and Chris, the coordinator, couldn't be nicer, and he said, Anne, what can I do for you today? And he immediately put me at ease, you know. And the kids were great. At first I kind of came in and thought, oh my god, you know, are they going to like me? But they were lovely, you know, they were lovely kids. Yeah.
Wow. And you know, how then did you get into the Ink Splinters?
Well, I've done a lot of courses now, and well, I started working in DIT then, which I've been ever since. It's TU Dublin now, but my first kind of immersion with poetry was with Eileen Casey. I did a course with her in Albán, an evening class, and there was a lot of things opened up to me at that course. She let me know about the Irish Writers' Centre and Poetry Ireland and things I take for granted now, but and of course Michael and Liam with the Intercorps Ledgerage have been very good to me as well, you know. So she, at the time, Michael was doing a riposte broadsheet, so she said he tries to take as much as he can, so he won't publish everything, but if he thinks something is okay, he'll. So I sent something in and he published it, and then I guess I'm not sure how long I was with Ian Splinters, on and off. I don't always get to go on a session, of course, with the pandemic now. It's limited. He sends out he sends out an email to people to see do they want to go on. So my friend Bernie had mentioned, and she's a real stalwart of the scene, and I actually met her again with another early course that I did with Tony Curtis, and we always joke that Tony Curtis is the lockdown surfer, you know.
Tony
So
Curtis.
and we nearly didn't become friends because we said we'd meet up, you know. And of course I was standing outside Grafton Street Beauties, and she didn't come, and I thought I'll just ring her, you know. And then of course she was outside Westmoreland Street Beauties. So we often joke about that as well, you know. We became friends anyway, but and then the Inkslingers, their Christmas parties are legendary. They're brilliant, yeah. And we have great launch nights for the anthology. They've been very good. Harry and Brian, Harry's particularly very, very good at organizing, and I don't think the group would go if it wasn't for him, you know. And I think the last launch night, I'm trying to think, because of the pandemic, the last year or two we haven't had a launch or a book, you know. But the last one we had, I think, was in we ended up in Cassidy's, and we had a great session, you know.
Yes, 2019, that's the
Yeah.
last one. But even in the 2020, although it wasn't launched as we wanted it to be, you actually had lots of beautiful stories. I love the way your poems, you write your poem and you're so concise. You had three there: Red Shoes, Disco Dancing, and Her Place. And
Oh, yeah.
we're going to have a taster of your poem. And but just because I'm a great fan of group activities, being involved with a group. What would you say was the main benefit from all these groups you've attended, including the Ink Splinters?
I think it's good for your confidence and also for meeting people, because your theme of prison today, I think it's all really in the mind, just a psychological thing. And I think for me, breaking out of the prison is connecting with other people in friendship, you know, like with my friend Jen, say, Maynooth. I remember I was a bit down one day, feeling a bit lonely, and I happened to meet her, and you nearly wouldn't say anything, but I kind of confided in her, and we kind of became friends then. And I think, you know, I think it's all about connection, you know. And even for me, over the lockdown, what's been really good throughout it all was, even though things were crap and you couldn't do anything, I got to spend a lot of quality time with my folks, you know. And I got to, normally I probably wouldn't have time to sit and have a cup of tea or that, but it was great. I could have a bit of dinner and sit and have a cup of tea and watch the news with them, you know. So I treasure that, like, you know. But
Right, that was fantastic. Because one of the things I remember about the Inkslingers is we'll go over the road and there's those lovely cakes and soups and stuff. And then there's like another session of being with people. And I think, but you got it right there. There and then we began to gel with different people and got to know people better. outside of the prompt, 30 minutes, write, read out. And I think that was really brilliant. And you touched on a good point. You've touched on the topic prison, but I'm going to bring you back to that. Would you please read for us your poem, Driving Home, because you got this high accolade. You were commended in the Francis Lickwood, I hope I pronounced that right.
That's right, yeah, yes. I was delighted. As I say, I'll get the poem now for you, I have it here. As I say, Liam and Michael was so good, like, they're so encouraging. So I'll read it. Driving home. You are driving, intent at the wheel, telling me a funny story of how your father nearly left you by the side of the road one time. I only half listen. You threaten to do the same to me. You have driven me many places, from music lessons to my first date at the Omniplex in Tala. You have collected me from discos, listening to my excited chatter about what had transpired that night. You drive me still, picking me up from my yoga class at the first sign of rain. This is your job, you take pride in it. You never tell me that you care, but it is obvious in the time you spend on the road, going from A to B to collect me. I will remember this in years to come, the comfort and warmth of your forward focus as we travelled home.
Do you know, I think that's such a lovely way to send off your father.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, correct me if I'm wrong about the way I absorbed that, because one of the things I like about your poem, which I'm not capable of doing, is that you could put things down in very concise detail and still give this image and this picture of what you're trying to say.
Well, I suppose I like writing and I love reading poetry as well, you know, and it's what I like doing.
What was it like to be? What was it like to be a special guest on the Out of Lunch series in Irish Writers Centre?
That's going back 10 years now, and I was so nervous. And John McNaby was so nice, and he gave me the reading a couple of months in advance. What new poems would I read and the whole lot. And I kept saying to different friends, I don't think I can do it. And of course, Bernie wasn't having any of that. She said, grand. And my mum was in bits, God, the day of it, you know, that morning. I did respect, it probably wasn't one of my best readings, you know, but I did a respectable reading, and there was a fairly good turnout, you know. Jarvis Clark was there. It opened up a whole new thing for me, because once I did that, then it was great for my confidence. I got in touch with, I saw an ad with Sarah Lundberg and the Seven Towers, and I got in touch with her and said, you know, they were asking for people to read, and I said, I'm available. So she took me on anyway, and she wouldn't take everyone on, you know. So she used to have readings in the bookshop there, the Chapters, and at lunchtime, and she organised loads of things, and in the evenings in Casties, and she sadly passed away, but they have, in her honour, they have the Sunfire sessions on different places. I'm not sure whether they're there now. I've gone a few times. I can't always go to late kind of readings because I have a job, you know, so I have to put that first, you know, the bread and butter, as they say.
So what did these readings do for you? Is it, apart from obviously you met a lot of wonderful people, but actually just reading your poetry, reading other people's poetry, what was it, what did it inspire in you? Because your love of words.
Again, it was good for my confidence, you know, and I met lots of really, really nice people, Carol Parkinson and Stephen Jane Smith, and although they didn't do so much, Carol Parkinson did a good bit, the Sarah's readings, and Catherine Anne Cullinan. She's a very esteemed poet, and it's great to actually get meet people like that, and they didn't make you feel they're up there and you're down here. You know, people say Jean O'Brien is another great poet, and they're so encouraging on the scene, you know, and even if you don't achieve what they achieve, you know, you enjoy it, and that's what it's all about, I think, is enjoying it, you know, not getting awards or that, so that's nice too. But yeah,
that's really the thing. You know what, this month we are talking about prison. That's our theme, and you've touched a little bit on it earlier on, but what does the word prison mean to you, Anne? And how do you, if I said this was your prompt, what would you think of the things that will come into your mind concerning prison?
I think, as I say, we do in, I've been doing yoga for many years, about 20 years now, would you believe? And we went back after a break of like a year and a half because we couldn't do it, obviously, with the COVID. But these last couple of weeks, I've had three classes so far. So she's been doing the chakras with us, and the very base chakra is the red chakra, and that's the grounding. It's the, you know, your food, your shelter, all that, the basic stuff. And then last week we were doing the water element, which is the orange center, and it's the water or the female. And I very much connect with water, I think. Now, I can't really swim, but I absolutely love going for walks along Dunleary Pier and that, you know. And also, I grew up going to visit County Mayo because my mum is hails from Mayo. And my uncle ran a post office. And we had the lighthouse, Blackside Lighthouse, and I think it was, trying to think, Ted Sweeney, yeah, he was he ran the lighthouse for many years, and I remember we actually got a tour when we were kids, you know. But going back to your idea of prison, I suppose, as I say, I think for me it's connecting, you know, not being so isolated, you know, getting out of the prison of your mind, you know. As you say in yoga, it's all about, yoga is the control of the thought waves of the mind. So as the yoga teacher often says, getting out of the head and into the body. You know, it's about stilling the mind. And if you could only do this, it'd be great. You know, stilling the mind and living in the moment. That's the buzz at the moment. I know the buzzword is living in the moment, but I think it's true, you know. I've done a couple of mindfulness courses and I find them really helpful, you know. And as my friend Jen often says, you know, she says, let all your cares and worries float away and enjoy today because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, you know.
That's a very sound thing. I really thank you for that. And we're coming to very closely towards the end of the program. When you're having good conversation, you don't even know where the time has gone to. But you have this lovely poem called Hot Whiskey. Do you want to just tell us about it?
Oh, yeah. I read it. This is from my mom. This is about the time when we were doing the course, The Literature of the Liberation. Hot whiskies for mom. We stumbled along the path, tipsy, after the two hot whiskies. We would walk together every Wednesday to our writing class, The Literature of the Colonies. We read Wild Sargasso Sea, Yvonne Boland, and Heart of Darkness. We loved Toni Morrison's Beloved, although I did not fully understand it, you did. Sometimes after the class, we would have apple pie and cream. You could have kept me in the house with you, but instead, you got me into everything that was going. It is the two hot whiskies I remember most, you and I, stumbling and laughing in the morning sun.
I don't know, it seems to bring a lot of memories, obviously, for your situation, but I'm thinking hot whiskey, dancing. She must have had a lot of fun. And I think the way you use your words to convey so much, that's what I admire a lot, even going through the anthology 2020 and the others. that, you know, I love the way this woman puts together words. So what do you think is responsible for that? You could be so concise with your word.
Yeah, it's only what I do. I don't really know. That's where I write. And as I say, the main thing is to enjoy it, really. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think if you do that, then you probably write faster than if you're in fact, I'm having a break from writing, really. I haven't been writing that much as of late, you know, but I'm not going to worry about it. I keep reading it and enjoying going to the readings, and if they come up with a poem, great, you know, and if not, you know.
So, Anne, thank you for that. How would we, if we wanted to follow your work and to catch up with your new stuff you're doing, are you on a Facebook, Instagram? Is there somewhere where we can follow you to know more about what Anne's doing?
I kind of keep in touch with writers through the Facebook. I am on Twitter, but I have to admit I don't look at the Twitter too much. The Facebook you get me all right. Yeah. I did have a blog, but I stopped. I don't use that so much, you know, but yeah.
So great. We can capture you on Facebook. Anne Morgan, I want to thank you for coming over, sharing your history, your life with us, and your poetry. I really thank you for the opportunity to have you here on International Writers Network. And we hope to follow you and see more of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I'm on your side. Oh, when times get can't be found like a bridge over troubled water. I will lay me down like a bridge over troubled water. I will lay me down. Thank you.
Download the podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
How's it going, brother?
All right, what's up?
Are these guys any good?
Dude, these guys are class.
I hear they play the best homegrown music live every Thursday night.
Yeah, on Near FM 90.3 from 8 till 9.
The Near FM Sessions.
The digital experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM digital experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
Here at Near FM, we are participating in the community call to help combat the effects of COVID-19. The purpose of the community call is to coordinate community activity and community assistance to where it is needed. We ask our listeners to look out for each other. If your neighbours or relatives are required to stay at home, check with them to see if they need supports. And if you're in that category yourself, don't hesitate to ask for help. Whether it's with shopping, fuel delivery, collecting medicines, or any other necessities of daily life. The local authority helpline is there as a safety net to ensure that everyone is looked after. If you need assistance and you live in Dublin City, call 01-222-8555. That's 01-222-8555. If you need assistance and you live in Fingal, call 01-890-5000. That's 01-890-5000. Let's all stay safe together from all here at Near FM.
90.3.
This is Near FM.
Hi, and welcome back to the second part of the International Writers Network. We are joined by Pam Ferguson, a wonderful and amazing author from Northern Ireland. And today we're going to be discussing her book, From Shore to Shore. She's going to tell us more about herself, her life.
Thank you very much, Mary. I'm very well.
Right.
It's good to be with you.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for taking the time. Now, one of the most fascinating things about you is that you grew up in Nigeria. Am I right?
That's right, yes. My parents were missionaries there. My mother from Belfast and my father from County Cavan. So I grew up as a third culture kid with the influence of two cultures, Nigeria, where I lived, and Ireland, where my parents came from, yet with a sense of not fully belonging to either.
And where Nigeria, because people, all Nigerians, theirs are pricked up now, and those from Africa listening on, which part of Nigeria did you go to?
Well, the thing was, we moved around different areas, which meant that you picked up a little bit of the Efik language, Igbo language, and then we went north to Ida, and we picked up a bit of the Igala language. So I remember how to say hello to people in Igala, Awa, and so on. And I have a very good Nigerian friend here who reminisces with me and puts me up to date about Nigeria today, because it's a long time since I've been there.
Right. And how long did you stay there? When did you actually leave Nigeria to come back to Ireland?
When I was 9 years old, it was around the time of independence in Nigeria. So I remember that just before the Biafran War. And I have a poem about how we lived there and the effect of this lovely country on our lives growing up. The colour, the richness of the colour, the tropical colours there, and the foods. We really enjoy the tropical fruits.
All right, so you really immersed yourself there. I'm really impressed, because I'm also from Nigeria, and so, but from the Yoruba side, which means you didn't really go to the south, but we're okay with you. I'm so glad that you had that influence, because your poems are very colourful and always exhibit the richness of the colours, at least the ones I've read so far. Now, you came back to Ireland. You lived by the border.
That's right, south of Armagh.
Right, and how did that influence your writing? When did you get influenced to write? Because you're coming from a foreign country, back here now, you're 9 years old. Was it from school time that you started to think, I want to write?
Well, I've always been interested in the sound of language, the rhythm of words, and the colours of nature and the world around me. And I found a way of responding to this by painting pictures and by making word pictures, poems, in fact. So I started writing poetry in my teenage years at school, and I've been writing for many years.
Right, and that is good because you're also an English teacher.
That's right.
Yes.
I specialise in English as a foreign language to teach people from overseas the English language.
And you worked with your husband, I'm told, in Christian universities in Indonesia and
Japan.
That's
right.
How did that? Again, because we're trying to get, how did that influence your writing? Because here you've got Nigeria to start with, that's got what colours and different things to you. Then you went back to Ireland and also Indonesia and Japan. What a variety of countries to have influenced you. Did they have an impact on your writing?
Yes, I think because of my experience of knowing another culture when I was very young, I grew up through school years wanting to spend more of my life working and living in another part of the world. And I studied to be a teacher and met and married someone who also wanted to work in overseas mission. And through our church, we were invited to work in a Christian university in Java. And we were there for 11 years. And we also taught, yes, in Japan. And yes, I put all my poetry into 12 different sections, and one of the sections is the poems that I wrote in Indonesia, specifically in one of the remote eastern islands that we spent some time in, and as part of the arrangement with the university. And so yes, that's why I call my book From Shore to Shore, because it is connected with three different continents, Africa, Europe, and Asia.
That is beautiful in the sense that we get from one woman three continents. I think that's really fabulous. And now you started to write. You're an English teacher. When did you actually start the writing process? Because English has always been part of you, teaching it?
Yes, yes. I've always been interested in presenting story through mime and drama. And I suppose some of my writing began in those days, in school days, and through my church, because I got passages from the Bible that would be used in part of the liturgy for Sunday services, and I would put them into dramatic form and write it in modern day poetic style language as a narration, and then have the people giving individual voices for telling the story. So I did a lot of that in church before I went to Indonesia, and then I was involved in training teachers in Indonesia, and I taught through mime and drama because Indonesians are very artistic and they have a lot of drama in their culture and dance. And so I wanted them to see that this could be used as a way of expressing what material that they were going to teach. For example, the RE teachers telling Bible stories to children through mime and drama and involving their classes in doing this. And then later on, I focused on writing my own personal responses to situations, to people, to places that we'd been to, and through events and writing poetry. But it was a long time before I actually put it together, the work of years, into 12 collections and into one volume that was accepted for publishing in early 2020.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, being that you actually taught in a Methodist college, in the Methodist College in Belfast, so I'm trying to get the viewers to understand that all your influence from the time when you were young, when your parents were missionaries in Nigeria, was actually very biblical. And I want us to take the first poem, which I find really, I want to use the word thrilling, and it really just, I just enjoyed it so much. I was thrilled. The bridal preparation, because one of the things you said earlier is that you were teaching people how to take Bible passages and dramatize them and enlighten, and, you know, and give it a meaning that the people they were teaching could understand fully what they're trying to convey. And I think this particular poem just showed me how powerful you are, your words are, in getting those things from a Bible, very famous Bible passage, but putting it into a place where we as ordinary people can understand it. Do you want to share that poem, the bridal preparation?
Yes, just
please,
a little bit about it, the background of it. Many of us are familiar with the Book of Esther in the Bible, and it was a time in the life of the Jewish nation when they were in captivity in Persia, or modern day Iran. And so they were mourning their loss of freedom. And the story of young Esther, taken to the palace of Xerxes, or in the Bible, he's called Ahasuerus. She, in microcosm, was in captivity herself, because she was brought into his harem and groomed to be his wife, the queen. And yet she, God had a plan for this nation, and Esther in particular, at this time, because there was a plot to destroy the Jewish nation, but God showed himself to be sovereign and ruler, and he enabled Esther to be brave and, in fact, to rescue the nation from perishing at the hands of the Persian people. And also, I find it interesting, and I bring this into the poem, the connection between Old Testament and New Testament, because in the New Testament, the parallel of the bride of Christ being the church or the people of God is carried on. It's introduced in the Old Testament, and it's a metaphor used for our relationship to Jesus. So I look at Esther and see how we can have some spiritual connection with her. Bridal preparation. Through the palace gates, monumental mansion of Xerxes the Great, tall and bearded with his parasol and fan, Persian emperor of lands from India to Ethiopia, Hebrew girl, Hadassah, Myrtle, daughter of captive nation, was taken. Flower blown in by the wind among imposing colonnades and terraces, paved with marble, mother of pearl and turquoise, rows of silver couches, goblets, banquets to the inner harem, fine spun garments, bowls of dates and honey. Her name in Persia, Esther, star, open sky above her, slave Haggai to stand on guard, towering walls surround her, bridal queen to be prepared with finest beauty treatment, her body toned with oil of myrrh and balsam, precious ointment, choice of an imperial king to be his pride and bliss, chosen by the King of Kings for such a time as this. Come to us, our bridegroom king, with robes of loving kindness. Prepare us for your wedding feast. Your presence is our fragrance, your peace, the pearls you give to share, to treasure, not destroy. Your ring, the seal of faithfulness, your love, our crowning joy. To this our world, the King of Love has sent the invitation to set us free to be his bride. We come from every nation.
Oh, that is so beautifully written. and so perfectly performed. Thank you so much. And I love the way you merge both New Testament and Old Testament, because we see the end. There's an invitation to all nations. And now I want to thank you for that. Your book, From Shore to Shore, Life in God's Global Kingdom in Poetry and Prose, has been reviewed and given very good reviews. But I want to know what it is you want readers to take away when they take your book home to read. What is it in your heart you want readers to take away from your book?
I think for me, it is a realization in life that God is present in every situation in our lives, the joyful and the challenging, distressing situations we find ourselves often in. And to trust him is just to live with hope day by day, believing that although we live in a struggle sometimes, there is good that God will bring about in the end. And and this is the core belief of what I'm presenting, because I give examples from my own life where we struggled to have children and then we adopted, and one of the children has had autism right through his life, and just how we prayed and believed, my husband and I together, that the Lord had his hands on our children, that he loved them and would bring them back to him and bring healing. And this has come about, and they're a great joy to us. And I just thank the Lord that all people can trust him, and he is the father of the international family of humankind. Those who look to him will know his blessing.
Perfect. I love that. Those who look to him will know his blessing. Thank you so much. So when we pick up that book, we can be rest assured that some of our challenges in life, we'll be able to see how you dealt with it, and through your poetry, you would express that to us. That is very encouraging and definitely inspiring for people, even outside of the kingdom of Jesus, of God. Now, today, this month, we're talking about prison. Very quickly, just in about 1 minute, when you hear the word prison as a writer and as Pamela Ferguson, what comes into your mind?
Well, I think it is a place where freedom is lost. And it makes me think, well, it makes me think of a very important issue today, that of the environment, and how Earth is meant to be a place where all creatures can have freedom to live and enjoy existence in natural habitats. But because of exploitation and greed, there has come about climate change, turning the environment into a wasteland or a prison. And many people are left homeless and hungry with no way of escape. And we're warned that the whole Earth could end up like this. And we have to ask, how we can free people, how we can make Earth somewhere that is a good place to inhabit for animals and human beings all over the world, and how we can contribute to a good Earth. And in one of my poems in my book, I call it The Prodigal's Confession, and it's about the regret of a lost son of the earth as he reflects on all that he has lost through wrong choices, and talks to God about this. It's something that's very close to my heart. And the other thing about prison is that so many people are imprisoned unfairly, and that so many people all over the world are put in prison because of their beliefs, their faith, or their political outspokenness. And we should always stand for justice in these situations where people are struggling in so many countries all over the world.
Thank you, Pamela. You did justice to that. I'm just I have nothing to say but to say thank you. You've done great. Taken us through from the environment to actually people who are in prison for their faith, for their beliefs, and for many things. And that is a kind of prison that we want to get people out of. Thank you for sharing that with us. Now, we're coming towards the end, and I tell you, the conversation is very quick. I wish you could stay here longer. But there's one beautiful poem that you wrote, your poem called 50 Words at a Window, which won the second prize in the recent composition run by the Association of Christian Authors. They ran a poetry competition and you came second. I want to congratulate you for that on behalf of all the listeners. We're always proud of people who win competitions there. But it says so many words. Do you want to share that with us, please?
Thank you, Mary. Yes, the theme that we were given was simply 50, because the association is 50 years old this year. So I chose to write a poem that is simply 50 words long. And I looked out of my bedroom window upstairs, and I call this 50 Words at a Window. In winter, when shadows lengthen and trees are shorn of autumn glory, reminding us of endings, there's a window when the sea has a chance to peer through shaken, sleepy branches. A whisper, even a glimpse of a hidden world, stirs me, wakens me to quiet promises, unveiling of hope.
Now, that is 50 words, because I have read it and I'm just so touched by it. And we have come to the end of the program. Very quickly to the end of the program. It's been a joy and a pleasure to have you. But before we go, we would like to know, Pamela, what is the best way to get your book? You're obviously from North Ireland. You're there in North Ireland. Could we get the books at the bookshops over here in the South?
Yes, this book can be ordered online from the publisher, which is Whipf and Stock in America, or it can be bought through Eden Books online, or it can be ordered from any bookshop. I have still copies at home that people around who ask for them can buy from me. So there's a number of ways of getting them.
Fantastic. It is great to know that we understand where the author of such a beautiful book is coming from. 12 chapters of the most amazing topics, and really shown us about the love of God, the theme about how we could, through your work, get even closer and understand how we come out of our own prisons as well. I love everything you've spoken to us about today. And if there was somebody sitting out there listening to you and says, I want to be like Pamela, I want to write, but I don't even know where to start from, what would be three quick suggestions you give them? Three quick things you would say to them. If you want to write today, this is the three things I think you need to start with. Could you give them any suggestion?
I think that if anyone has the desire to write, they just need to pick up a pen and a piece of paper and write down their thoughts in just simple phrases, one after another. And then look and feel, how do I express my feelings most in these words? Which words that I've written express how I feel about my situation, what I've observed in whatever I've written about. So my thoughts and my feelings are expressed. And then to join a group of people or even one other person who writes, and use them as a springboard, use them as an echo chamber, and talk to them about your poems and get their response to what you're writing, and listen to their writing and read the works of other people, so that you feel the rhythm and words and respond yourself in your own way to other people's writing.
Now, this is a very special poem dear to Palm's heart, so I'm going to get her to read that.
The poem Time Voyage is about a voyage that marked the transition between one part of my life and another. The first part of the poem recalls childhood in Nigeria, and the second, in the same number of lines, I recall the new life in South Armagh, the contrasts and yet similarities between the two existences are evident. Time Voyage. Soon after the split half of the century, not far from the split half of the globe, I slipped into existence, middle child of my family, voyaging between two continents, from forests of palms on the vast river Niger to botanic garden rose beds near Grandpa's Belfast home. Roses like beacons through the grey drizzle, lamplights in grey streets, grey slates, grey chimney smoke, all the warmth inside, milk chocolate, granny's apple pie, the blazing coal. Back in the shade of our mission house veranda, our school spaced, screened, mosquito-proofed, we watched the changing colours of a chameleon, a ripening mango, the fan-like wings of a butterfly creeping from a chrysalis, the leaping and skipping of children playing in the sun-scorched compound in the brief interlude between preparations for independence, flags and drums, dances, celebrations, and the savage slaughter of Biafran innocents. I follow again the fireflies gleam in the humid half-darkness. From the deck of the ocean liner, I watch the porpoises play. A tree was axed. I see a dugout drifting, the boat upturned, the paddle lost, the rider missing. In the in-between age, uprooted and transplanted, I was educated and segregated in the ancient capital with two cathedrals, tower and spires, St. Patrick duplicated, on twin hilltops in the orchard county, reared in bogland, bandit country, sheepland where the air shimmers and spring water cascades in ice-cold streams. Ulster Blackwater straddles the border that splits our island and our family tree on either side. We crossed the hills and heath by bus to school, the walls, the gates, the avenue of cherries, where girls in green, selected and secluded, the golden harp our badge serenely gathered. To books and boutiques we were equally loyal, to the Beatles, the Seekers, and Boys of the Royal, in the brief interlude before the explosive history of our locality was reignited as a daily reality, demolishing the myth of a civilized society. I follow again the fire and the drums and the chilling half-darkness, the tribal dance, the rattle of guns while children play. A ship at sea is lost without a compass. The harbor searchlight beams across the bay.
Thank you so much. You've been an excellent guest, and we've enjoyed listening to your work today. I want to thank you, and I hope we'll see more of you.
Everyone needs compassion, love that's never failing, the mercy fall on me. Everyone needs forgiveness, the kindness of a savior. Of nations, Savior, He can move the mountains. My God is mighty to save, He is mighty to save forever, author of salvation. He rose and conquered the grave. Jesus conquered the grave.
He is mighty to save.